Okay, a couple of starters just to remind you that the topic of the presence of God and breaking through into the presence of God is never far from our minds. I just couldn't miss the possibility of showing you that one. I return to that topic this morning.
You've got the mentors and the colour pictures.
Some people get it, some people don't.
Yeah.
I want to show you a video, a music video this morning. I like to, when people are coming in, put up music that you wouldn't necessarily. Can you get these speakers, please? The people wouldn't necessarily hear. Wait till you see. Had an extended conversation with a young guy who I've never met before this week. About styles of music and their effect on emotions. And one of the things he said to me is he said it would be interesting to hear worship music produced, for instance, in something that could never ever touch anybody's emotions, like country style. which was a very, very interesting sort of statement. I discuss with him a bit later on the fact that there are some people who think that there is no other music that can actually touch your heart in that way. But that led me to seeing what a development in music, in Christian music at the moment is doing. I think I've shown stuff before from the Roots movement, which is a sort of folk, bluegrass and country thing that's been going on, and there's a whole stream within Vineyard music that's devoted to this now. This is a song that I think is actually worth listening to quietly, just seeing whether God's got anything to say to you about. It's produced by it comes out of this sort of stream, and they're running church out of quite a famous bar in New York called the Trash Bar, and lots of music comes out of here, and this is from an event they held there. I think if you look up Cabin Fever Productions, you could get through it that way. If you go into Roots Worship, it'll take you rather a long time, either on Google or in YouTube, to get there. But hey, you know, that's what I do all week, watch Google. At least some people, watch Google, watch YouTube. At least that's what some people think. Whoops. I need to go here.
Bye.
helpful, you could go and just Google the Works Find Mercy here. Part of the recording, given the fact it was under my folder for the duration. It does put me in mind of the fact that that the singer, from what I can see, the whole tone of her voice has changed between albums. And when I worked for Word, I was responsible for Bibles, and they had, of course, a very big music division. And they insisted on taking British recording artists who they thought would make it to Nashville to record, because there was a different sonic, which was almost a sort of metaphysical thing. It was to do with the fact that their studios were set up in a different way, that they insisted produced a different kind of sound. Which would make records sell, as they were at the time, make records sell better in that environment. But whatever sort of music works for you is the kind that you need to reference and to help you. And of course, one of the greatest skills that we can develop is to be able to draw from other people's music as well. The reason that Westerners who are living in Africa attend international churches is primarily because that's the kind of music that works for them. And a couple of times recently, conferences have tried to introduce music from another culture into their worship sets, and it just doesn't work. Which leads to an interesting thought about where the Spirit of God is and what the Spirit of God's doing. And we're going to come to that in what we're looking at this morning, albeit briefly, because it isn't in my notes and therefore I shouldn't really go there. We're talking about success and how to avoid it over the next few weeks. For those of you who were here last week, you'll know that we started off by going through a series of questions which we walked around and talked about. What will be personal success for you in the next 12 months? Who of you were here last week? Okay, try and look around, find somebody who you don't think was here and tell them what you came up with as being what your idea of personal success would be in the next 12 months. That's probably enough, because if your success goals take that long to tell somebody else, you're not going to achieve them anyway, because you've got too many. You need to be a bit more focused. We actually got people to try and pair up with somebody they thought was in a similar situation to themselves, and to talk about what lifetime success might be for people in their situation. Depending on our situation, we've got different ideas about what lifetime success might be. And then we finished off with this question: as a think about, rather than anything else, because it pushes back deeply into what we're talking about. And that is there a higher level of success, success which is significant, that we could be looking for? There are a lot of people for whom success, particularly at the moment, is actually having enough in their pension pot to have a retirement. A good retirement does not significance make. Yeah? It does not make significance. Touch lives in very small numbers could make for much, much a greater significance than the kind of things that we often bring to mind. We're using as our material for this, with very good reason that I'll explain as we go along, the story of Jonah. Now, most people know the story of Jonah, a few people didn't, but I wanted just to try and give it some context. And the context of Jonah, of course, is pretty much the Mediterranean Sea. Yeah. You all know what the Mediterranean looks like. You've got Spain at this end, and then you've got Italy. Yep. You've got a couple of islands there, and I'm assuming they were there when Jonah was around. You come down here to some sort of Greece stuff, and then there's Turkey, and then round here's the Near East. You come across here to Egypt, and then there's a bit of a hole, and sort of comes up again to here, essentially. That's what you need to know. We know that... what? Oh, well, that's fortuitous, isn't it? Jonah was a prophet who lived around here. That was a place called Gath Hepha. And Jerusalem was about here. The local port, Joppa, was there. And God spoke to him and called him to somewhere which was possibly at that time the capital of the Assyrian Empire, which was Nineveh. And when God spoke to him and called him to Nineveh, he said, blow that for a game of soldiers, and went straight down to Joppa and got himself a boat. Where we left the story last week, by the way, there's Cyprus there, and I think Crete's about there. They've grown a bit. He went from Joppa and he set out on a ship to somewhere which we think... or the people who know think, is on the southern coast of Spain. So he went in the opposite direction to where God was telling him to the farthest point he could possibly imagine at the time. And what you need to think about is that it is that story which leads to the big point of the book of Jonah, right? The big point of the book of Jonah is simply this. Don't be like Jonah. Okay? We can interpret the Bible in loads and loads of ways. By the way, if anybody ever comes up with the way of interpreting the Bible, they've got to be wrong. Okay? Because you can study hermeneutics, which is the big word for interpreting the Bible, and you can get some good rules, some useful rules, which will generally work most of the time, but then you find that the way that Jesus used the Bible and the way that Paul used the Bible sometimes contradicted those principles. But if we're looking generally for principles, what we aim to do is to do this thing about distancing and then fusing horizons. Okay? What we do is we say, how was it different then from the way it is now? Once we know how it was different then, we can understand what it meant to them then. And once we know the differences, we can think about what it means to us now. We said last week that the story of Jonah is not a parable, it's not an allegory, it's told as a set of real events. That if you struggle with believing that Jonah could be swallowed by a big fish, then the problem is not there in the text, that's your issue. Because if we believe in a God that does miracles and can raise Jesus from the dead, and can raise us from the dead too, then being swallowed by whales or big fishes is simplicity itself. You know, and it's a cause for misery if you don't believe in miracles. It actually says in 1 Corinthians 10, if the dead are not raised, then we're the most miserable people around.
because we're believing something that's rubbish. Okay? So that's where it all starts. So that's the story of Jonah. And by the way, there is a principle. You may think I'm being a bit negative by saying that Jonah, the message of Jonah is don't be like Jonah. But Paul actually says in 1 Corinthians 10, it says, these things happen to them. He's talking about the people in the Old Testament. He's actually talking about the Israelites in the desert in particular, as examples, and were written down as warnings for us. How terrible, isn't it, to find that you're a warning to other people? Yeah? Don't be like him. Don't be like her. Sometimes we can feel that, and we feel as though we want to say to our kids, whatever you do, don't do what I did. Yeah? Do something different. But that was written down from us. So, if you think you're standing firm, right? Don't get too big for your boots. Say, oh, we're in the New Testament, they're in the Old Testament. Be careful that you don't fall. And he goes on to say this verse, which as a teenager I found really valuable. And I could still do with looking at today. No temptation has overtaken you except what is common to mankind. You know? If you find yourself saying, oh, I'm under dreadful pressure, that can be true. But if you take the step to say, my life is much worse than anybody else's, then you're making a mistake. Because if you go around, you'll find enough people who are in a very similar position to the one that you're in. And that's an interesting point. It says, and God is faithful. He will not let you be tested beyond what you can bear. But when you are tested, he will also provide a way out so that you can endure it. Okay? Yeah? That's as much as... I'd love to... I want to talk about that one now. But that's what the Bible's like. You start reading it and you begin to realise there's all sorts of stuff that starts to branch out of it like an octopus. So don't be like Joe. If you get a chance, read Jonah 1. The whole book of Jonah only takes two pages in the Bible. So it's not exactly the biggest sweat to read. What's next? Oh, yeah. Just to show you a little bit of a reminder. I'm not going to show you all that we showed last week. There is a 27-minute video, the link to which is on the website that you can follow up and watch it through. We're going to watch a bit about chapter 2, but just to get the introduction, which gives us our initial thoughts about Jonah, the person that everybody should try to avoid being.
To me, a foreigner? No!
They will be
rejoice when you warn them that the Lord God is going to punish them for their sins.
No! No! Anyway, you're not their God.
At least that's what they think.
No! They've got gods of their own, and plenty of them. Nasty heathen gods with claws and wings and horns. I'd rather go to sea. No! Why should it matter to you what happens to Nineveh? It certainly doesn't matter to me.
Jonah.
It probably doesn't even matter to them. No! No! No!
Nineveh, this way!
Oh, thank you! It's that way, is it? Well, I'm going to go this way!
Okay, that was a quick recap. What we did, if I remember rightly, we actually took time after we'd listened to the text as well to look at some of the features of Jonah's personality. He was stubborn. He was discontented. Or alternatively, he was far too contented doing what he was doing. He'd got very low self-worth, but on the other hand, he argued with God, which suggests just the opposite. He was a loner, which some people think would be required for an Old Testament prophet. He resisted taking responsibility. He was very much centred on the Hebrew nation. As far as he was concerned, God's goodness began there. Somebody made a quick diagnosis and suggested that he was bipolar, and he was very determined as well. It's quite a long walk from Gath Hepha, however you pronounce it, to get to Joppa, and he must have put some of his savings into that particular trip. There are a number of features that I think that the text is concerned with, and we're going to be concerned with today about him. That he rejected other people. You know, quite often as we get to know ourselves, as we get to know other people, we find they've got a very restricted view that there is within each of us. If there's not closet racism, there's hidden prejudice against other people that suggests that people like us are more valuable than others. The second thing we found last week was that he was just as guilty as the people with the other religions of segmenting God's activity. You know, we do it, of course, every time we come into the meetings and say, God is here today, right? Because that's a statement of the obvious. What we want to be able to do is, when the washing machine's broken down, to be saying, God is here today. Right? God is here in power. He's here in mercy. He's here in grace. Who cares whether he's here on Sunday morning when we've got everybody else to support us? The key is he here 24/7? Yeah? And what are we doing to help one another appreciate the fact he's around? And we are going to deal with that in a little while. Another interesting thing was that he was disconnected. You know, that he fell asleep in the bottom of the boat, just like Jesus did when there was a storm. But there can be different reasons why people don't experience emotional arousal. Jesus was at peace. Okay? And sometimes we'll find ourselves saying, well, I'm quite calm. Everybody else is bothered about this, but I feel okay. Well, that may mean just that your emotions have been cut off, that you're not in touch with your feelings. And I dare say that was the case Jonah. Sorry. I'm just wondering why I'm not reading my notes. So he was rejecting me and mine. He was not interested in the unfamiliar. He wasn't interested in grace and mercy. He segmented He ran away from God. He thought you could have no-go areas with God. I wonder if you have opened up your life to Jesus, but you've opened up the front door. You've let Jesus into the living room, possibly into the kitchen, although it's a bit of a mess there. But there are some places where you've still got the door firmly closed. And think you can say to Jesus, Lord, you're Lord of my life, while still treating him like a visitor, where he only goes in the rooms he's been invited in. Well, that's the problem with having an idea that God has particular places that he can be restricted to, and particular spaces which can still be yours and you can keep control of in the way that you want. Then we talked about disconnecting, about him being emotionally blocked, denial. You come across people sometimes who are Christians. They want to follow Jesus so far, but they'll say things like, oh, well, I don't do the praying. I leave my wife to do that, or I leave other people to do that. I don't exercise faith. That's not really for me. Right? That's disconnecting. Without faith, it is impossible to please God. Yeah? And finally, we found that here was a guy. I was saying last week, his first case of assisted suicide. He got them to chuck him overboard. He preferred death to destiny. Interesting to think that when he got to that particular point, he didn't even think that if God could make the waves, if God could chase him down as far as the Mediterranean Sea, I don't know how far they got out, but I understand the Mediterranean can be problematic at times. Where's me map? I haven't gone to all this effort of drawing a map. I really want to use it and get some mileage out of it. But let's say he'd got along to, what, somewhere like here. If he found that the God who he thought lived here in Jerusalem could extend his activity this far, then perhaps it would be possible that rather than just deciding that he might as well die, that God would be willing to listen to him. Yeah? But really, rather than go to Nineveh, I'd prefer to be dead. He preferred death to destiny. He actually preferred death to discomfort. And that's where we pick the story up again. So, what I need to do is just to place this inside a framework. Do you know there's something called the Jonah complex? Told people last week about this. The idea came from a guy called Abraham Maslow. It's not necessarily very popular at the moment. He was the bloke who this thing of a sort of, in basic psychology, you come across it, that you've got these basic needs here that you gradually progress through. Most people sort of stop here, he suggested, and never go on to lives of significance, to self, what he called self-actualization. He suggested that was down to to the Jonah complex. And the Jonah complex is a bit like comfort zones. The arrangement of chairs today sort of means meant that I'm spending even more time walking up and down than I do normally. Let's think about comfort zones. Anybody here know what the comfort zone is? Right? Let's have a look. Here's a comfort zone. Let me explain it. And everybody knows what this is, even if you don't use it. Here's comfort. Yeah, I'll use two pages. I'll waste paper today. Here's comfort zone. Okay. This is what I'm comfortable doing. Okay, Wendy would disagree with me probably, but I'm comfortable with standing on the ground in the garden and doing jobs that need to be done. Okay.
I think I take it he does disagree with
yeah,
you.
Okay. I am uncomfortable, right? That's the uncomfortable zone. With jobs that involve going up a ladder. Cope with going up a pair of steps, but if it involves going up a ladder, then not good. Not comfortable. Yesterday, we noticed that we've got an extra little piece of gutter on our house, which is right up by the chimney, and looks like the Hanging Gardens of Babylon at the moment. The grass is so tall, you couldn't mow it with a mower. You'd have to take the strimmer up there to cut it. And that is not my comfort zone. That's my panic zone. Okay? Now, you may not think you've got a comfort zone, but you have. Have a little think about it. Talk to somebody else about an area where you've got a comfort zone, you've got an uncomfortable zone, and you've got a panic zone. What would that be? Just get hold of that, because I want to differentiate this from the Jonah complex. Okay, we've got that, right? We tend to think in terms of staying within our comfort zone because we are fearful about moving outside. The Jonah complex addresses another issue, which is that as well as our comfort zone, there is the possibility of having a learning zone as well. Okay? Now just have a think. I have got no interest in learning to climb ladders. If I was going to do that, 20 years ago, 25 years ago, possibly. Stuff that for a game of soldiers now. Somebody else can climb up ladders. We will pay the window cleaner to do the gutters. That's the way it is. There's a learning zone. But then, what's beyond your learning zone? There's your destiny. Okay? And quite often, it isn't really because of fear that we avoid going into the future, as we've seen with Jonah. It's because we want to avoid hardship. Going into God's future, going into our destiny, finding our calling, achieving our gifts and possibilities will actually put us in a position where we experience hardship. We'll actually be exposed. Remember last week, those of you who were here, we talked about the tall poppy syndrome. Sticking your head up means that somebody's going to be out there to chop it off. Yeah? There's a chance of... do you know, every time I find myself in a position where I think about calling people forward for prayer or making a statement about what God's going to do, I'm conscious of the fact that it takes me outside of my comfort zone. And the feeling is not so much that I'm fearful of doing it, but that I don't want people put up with people saying, "Oh, there he goes again, talks a big thing, and then can't produce it." Yeah, that's part of the Jonah complex kicking in there. There's insecurity as well, of course, that's an example of it. But probably the worst thing is that in all of our lives, the Jonah complex works where we don't push on into what God has got for us, and we don't take responsibility for what God wants us to take responsibility for. If you do not set yourself to achieve your destiny in God, to know your gifts and calling, and to follow through, other people will suffer. Starting with your children, if you have children, going on to your neighbours, going on to the church, and then going on to people whose forevers need changing. That was the case with Jonah. He was a prophet of God, for goodness sake. He knew all this stuff, but stayed back from there. Okay, now, what you've got here is Oh yeah, let's have another bit of video. I don't know what I've done with the time this morning, but it's certainly disappeared.
Praise and thanks to the Lord God of heaven.
They chucked him overboard now.
The God who has saved us from shipwreck and death.
Up with it, lad! Pull hard! Heave! All right, lad! Up with it, come on!
My distress, I called to the Lord, and he heard your voice. When waves closed over me and my life seemed to be at an end, I cried out, and he answered you. As I sank into the ocean depths, I remember the Lord. And he saved your life.
That's it's definitely not a children's film. If you look at the text, you'll understand why the fish looked like it did. And that's what we're going to do now. What I've given you is actually, over the past few weeks, occasionally we've heard people say, when they were reporting back, that they didn't particularly like the Bible translation that was used. And what I've stuck in front of you is four translations. What I want you to do is to home in on one of those and just look at it while I'm reading text in the NIV. In my distress, I called to the Lord. This was when he was inside the big fish, and he answered me. From deep in the realm of the dead, I called for help, and you listened to my cry. You hurled me into the depths, into the very heart of the seas, and the current swirled about me. All your waves and breakers swept over me. I said, I've been banished from your sight, yet I will look again towards your holy temple. Just quick comment there. In fact, the NIV translates that sentence differently to every other translation you've got there. Hey, you pay your money and you take your choice. And interestingly, the NIV says the opposite to what all the other translations say, if you have a look, because all the other translations, including the NRSV there, say, I will not look again on your holy temple. It's just because sometimes in the Old Testament text, the negative just doesn't appear, and you've got to take a guess at where it should be.
The New Living Translation says, I will look.
He does say, I will look, does it? Yeah. That's probably because the New Living Translation is actually derived from the NIV, we think, rather than from the original Hebrew and Greek. The engulfing waters threatened me. The deep surrounded me. Seaweed was trapped around my head. To the roots of the mountains I sank down, the underwater mountains. The earth beneath barred me forever. But you, Lord, my Lord God, brought my life up from the pit. When my life was ebbing away, I remembered you, Lord, and my prayer rose to you, to your holy temple. Those who cling to worthless idols turn away from God's love for them, but I, with shouts of grateful praise, will sacrifice to you what I have vowed, I will make good. I will say salvation comes from the Lord. Okay, we've only got a few minutes here. But so I've got to do something quite quickly. The first thing I've got to do is to ask you this question. How did he manage to write that down when he was inside the fish? Well, I don't quite know how he put it together, but that question does come up from time to time, doesn't it? But here's a guy who's just been swallowed by a whale, and suddenly he goes back into prophet mode. And he's been behaving very, very badly. Jonah has been a very naughty boy. Right? And here he comes into his Sunday morning meeting with God and starts singing all the songs. Right? All the right words come out. Do you ever get to that position where, you know, sort of something really bad could have been happening in your car on the way here in the morning? You open the car door, and as you open the car door, the Holy Spirit comes upon your whole family, and people behave like respectable human beings all the way through the meeting until they get back in the car again. And then it all goes. Right? Very human, isn't it, to be like that? You're arguing about whose fault it was that the kids haven't got up or whatever or worse or, you know, and then suddenly it's all okay. You get outside and the whole thing starts again. Now, part of that, of course, is because when we're in groups, it encourages us and helps us. Some of it is because fundamentally we are liars, right? We want to give a good impression. We want to be respectable. We want to be accepted. And we're not really showing what's in our heart. So I think that's one of the reasons why that bit is actually in there. It's showing how crazy people are. And that's the bit of Jonah that's inside of us. We believe the right things, but our emotions and our behaviour goes in the opposite direction. Okay, we're going to finish with a little bit of an exercise here. Sorry, Phil, can I just work out where I marked up? Because I've taken the verse references out. I thought I was swept away from your sight, and when my life was slipping away, I remembered you. Okay? The bits that I've wanted to... I'm going to... Okay, you've pretty much got this, so I can do this now. Never mind. I don't need to draw on it because you've got a verse that's marked up here where it talks about I thought I was I have been banished from your sight. Okay? You see, what's happened here is that this is this business about thinking God's presence is only in some places. Yeah? I thought I was banished from your sight. When are you banished from God's sight? Never. You sure? Some of you look as though you're not sure. Remember where we were when we were talking about God has made us what we are? God is always with us. And the important thing for Jonah was that the fact that God was around and God was with him, that he was in God's presence, was not so that he could be tortured and killed, but so God could rescue him. Yeah? And there are times in our lives when actually being in a bad situation is the best thing that could happen to us, because it's in that it's at that point. By the way, when it talks, you'll see this in the New Living Bible, that it actually talks about God's presence there in that particular verse. A bit later, the other piece I've marked up is this, where it talks about, what does it say about I remembered you? When I was slipping away, when my life was slipping away, I remembered you. And you see, not being aware of the presence of God leads us to being practical atheists. We've talked a lot about practical atheism. If you don't know that God is here now and is with you, then you live like a practical atheist. You live without the closeness of God in your life, and you live without his resources. So I'm beginning to connect those two things together. I know I've talked to you about the fact that I'm bothered by my own practical atheism. I know I'm a practical atheist whenever I get worried about stuff. Okay? That's practical atheism. It's saying that God is not there, God is not with me, that even if he is around, he's an impersonal force and he's not interested in me. Right? Perfect love casts out all fear. Knowing Jesus is with you changes things completely. I think I better stop there because we're running over time now. Next week, I won't be speaking. I'm really looking forward to hearing Andy. I went to have coffee with Andy to talk about some stuff, and he'd been in the scriptures that particular morning, and God had been speaking to him about some things that you need to hear before the church updates. It's just reminders of vision and what we're really excited and passionate and motivated about. And that's going to happen next Sunday. He'll probably get some people to help him. The week after that, all our band leaders are on holiday, and we're going to do something different on the Sunday. That'll be bank holiday weekend. That's there. And then on the 1st of June, we'll be coming back to Jonah again. So why don't you take away that sheet with you, and over the next couple of weeks try and watch the whole of the Jonah video. Links are all available, and we'll make sure that we get further on with the story next time. And would you please sign up for the groups, for the update groups. The papers are on the chair there. It will help us, particularly Wednesday night is going to be here, but if we find there's a very small group on Thursday, we'll actually have that group wherever it's convenient. So if we know who's coming to which, that would be really good, and it helps us just get the whole thing sorted out. Do try and be there, however close you are to the centre or not. If you can't get there, if you just can't get there, we'll make sure we update you afterwards. But if we have a meeting with you on your own, it will be a very difficult one, because it will take a very long time. Because you'll have to sit down with Andy and with Dave Sandberg and go through all the details of absolutely everything that we might possibly have covered when we were in a bigger group. Okay? That's it.